How are you?
Doing wonderful. Yeah, if you're ready, let's dive into this wonderful film.
Oh, thank you very much. Have you had it? You watched it? You're in Dallas, I believe.
Yeah, I'm in Dallas, and I was able to watch it last night, and it was remarkable. I loved it.
Oh, thank you so much, Kelly. That's very generous of you. Thank you.
So I'd love to start with the fact that the Sundance premiere, though, there was a bunch of people that liked it, too. Y'all had a wonderful reaction there.
Yes, we were, you know, not every day they give you a standing ovation, and you always feel a bit such a relief as well. The audience really did seem to like it very much, and they stood up and clapped and all those lovely things that make you feel maybe 3 years of your life haven't been in vain. so it was very gratifying to see that first kind of real public screening get a good response.
You know, in your career, you've always done well with big name actors and great leads, but we've really noticed, you know, over the years that strong female leads in particular, like Reese and Helen Mirren and now Kira, do wonderful in your films. Is there anything that, do you approach your female leads any different than, you know, let's say Ben Kingsley or some other actors you've worked with?
No, not really. I just think, you know, great actors are great actors, male or female, and I just like to mix it up, and I have a sister, I have a twin, my own kids are twins, and one's a boy and one's a girl, and I would hate for my daughter to feel that, you know, she was in any way lesser than her brother, so maybe I'm just drawn to telling stories where women or men show some backbone. And often the films I'm drawn to most, I think, are stories in which individuals, men or women, are confronted with some sort of genuine moral or ethical dilemma that really hooks me and asks me, as a human being, what would you do? Would you have the courage, in the case of this film, Official Secrets of Kira, with Catherine, about Catherine Gunn, would I have the courage to do what she did? And I'm not sure I would. And, you know, to risk my job, and in her case, not only her job, but her freedom, in order to expose fraud or wrongdoing in an organization. She happens to be a spy working for GCHQ, but most of us work at some point within an organization, and whether it's Enron or your accounting firm or a law firm or an entertainment firm, when you come across something where there's some sort of fraud or thing, you know, do you stand up and risk your job? And it's easy to say, oh, you should. But jobs are precious and our freedom is precious. And so I think it takes a special kind of bravery to put it all on the line to do what you know is right for the greater good.
Would then you say that because of, like, your background as a lawyer, did you feel more at home in looking in the scenes with Ralph Fiennes, more so than maybe the espionage?
Yeah. Sorry, I beg your pardon, what was the last part of the question?
Well, just that you connected more with his side of kind of where he was coming from compared to the kind of spy elements of the other side.
That's a really good question. I suppose I'm comfortable around lawyers because I was a lawyer, but I think the essence of the law that I've always been interested in, international law, human rights law, you know, it goes to the heart of questions of military intelligence, too, because underneath the military intelligence establishment is, in theory, a system of laws that sets those organizations in place. So to answer the first part of your question, yes, I really enjoyed speaking to Ben Emerson. He's a force of nature, an amazing lawyer, brilliant mind, got to really pay attention to keep up. But, you know, when you have a lawyer that good and with that kind of presence, you need an actor with really great presence to play him and you know, Ralph Fiennes just embodies Ben and his power and strength and force of personality, but also his rigorous intellect and quiet intellect until he needs to sort of go a little stronger really well. And obviously Ralph met with Ben and they got on really well, and Ralph really channeled Ben very well. So in terms of the legal arguments about the defense of necessity, which was incredibly novel, and the way that Ben Emerson used that defense, I don't know if you know, but the defense of necessity usually used in situations, for example, here's a really mundane one. I'm racing to the hospital with my pregnant wife who's about to give birth. I break the speed limit. I'm breaking the law. I get a ticket. And in court I go, yes, I am guilty of breaking the law, but my defense is that it was necessary to break this particular law in order to save my future child's life or my wife's life. And this can be used by firemen. You broke into the neighbor, you smashed through their house, you destroyed their property. Yes, it was necessary in order to save a child that was in the next building or whatever. But it has never been used in the context of an espionage case or an official breach of the Official Secrets Act. And of course, sadly, even though he came up with the defense, it still hasn't been tested because, of course, they dropped the case. But what Ben did from a lawyering point of view that was brilliant was he said, well, hold on. If this war was in fact illegal and Catherine broke the Official Secrets Act, the law of the Official Secrets Act, she broke the law, but if the war was illegal, should we not argue that it was necessary to break the law of the Official Secrets Act in order to expose an illegal war and save potentially hundreds of thousands of lives? He's taking that same argument about breaking the traffic speeding limit and applying it in a much bigger context, but the principle, surely, is the same. And in order to prove the war is illegal, he then calls for the Attorney General's documents going back months and months before the final days of the final days approaching the invasion, to sort of establish what the Attorney General's position was on the legality of going to war without a UN resolution. And as you see in the film, he speaks to the Deputy Attorney General who'd resigned and establishes that Lord Goldsmith's position was, in fact, that war would be illegal without a UN resolution. So he's all set to kind of make his case at the end of the film. He's set to say, the other documents, kindly give them to me. You see, the Attorney General has been saying for ages, the war is illegal. If it's an illegal war, it was necessary for Catherine Gunn to break the law of the Official Secrets Act in order to save lives, and therefore she should be found not guilty, despite the fact that she confesses to breaching it. But of course, he never got to make that argument because they just simply dropped the case and didn't have to show the documents that Lord Goldsmith had. And as you know, those documents were only shown in 2010. And when they were made public, they revealed exactly what Ben Emerson thought they would reveal. I hope that wasn't too long-winded and complicated, but does that make sense?
No, definitely. And I think it sums up the power behind what she was trying to do. You know, I was blown away by one scene in particular that I think, for being a Texan, I think is hitting very timely right now. I know it's not intended, but the deportation sequence that we get to see in the film, I think will hit Americans in a very different mindset. But can you talk about
the
importance?
That's very interesting. I hadn't thought of it. I should have, but you're right. Sorry, go ahead. Yeah.
Well, I'd love to know your opinion on that scene in particular and how that not only can be looked at by Americans through a different, you know, eye, but also I think everyone around the world can feel the power of that sequence.
Well, I think the power of that sequence perhaps lies in the incredible vulnerability and that people seeking asylum feel. I think the danger we're in right now in here in the U.S., and I'm an American citizen now, and my children are born here, and I'm very passionate, by the way, about the checks and balances of the American system and the Constitution and the fundamental laws that underpin this democracy, because, as you know, I grew up in a country under apartheid in South Africa where there was none of those checks and balances or constitutional protections existed, and indeed were taken away in the 80s until you had indefinite detention without trial and without the right of access to a lawyer at all, which is inconceivable to an American. So I actually feel I'm deeply patriotic about Americans' founding institutions, and that's why these films for me are patriotic and not anti-American. So I just want to get that out of the way, because it is about protecting what makes America great, which are these great founding ideas of separation of the executive from from the legislature, from the courts, and due process, and all these things that make this country great. So, but to the question of deportation, I think you've really got to, in order to not lose your human entity, try to imagine what it feels like to have to flee a place that you call home because you do not feel safe, because the place is either at war or so full of criminality, and you've been... Nobody does this lightly. And I think if you look in the film, I mean, Yasha, he's a marvelous, lovely man who just frankly wanted to keep his head down. As a child, he'd known too much conflict in his home, and he just wanted to keep his head down. And then his wife goes and leaks this document and turns his life upside down. So if anything, it maybe all the film does is humanize someone in a position that many people trying to find asylum find themselves in. Like, they really are. We have to remember these are human beings. So when President Trump sort of goes, throw her out, and this whole Trump thing that's going on now, we have to just take a pause and say, we are talking about human beings here, not objects. And it could be you. I mean, it's really a little rich to be forget how lucky so many citizens are that they were born here and not somewhere else. It's just an accident of birth. So I think we have to remember that we need our compassion for people whose accident of birth was not as fortunate as ours, the place where they were born. We just need to take any kind of ugly cruelty out of it and try and be more sensible and kind about how we handle this, I think. I don't know if I'm saying the right thing, but I think you know what I mean.
No, I definitely feel what you mean, and I'd love to extend further on the South African part. My parents are South African, and I've thus been quite a big fan of yours from Tsotsi on the way through Rendition. I would love to know, you've had the same editor for specifically those movies and the X-Men and Eye in the Sky, Megan Gill, and also...
Yeah, Megan.
And your composers as well.
Yes.
Can you
this
talk?
This is my old band. This is the band that goes back to Tsotsi. So it's always great when you can get the band back together again because we know each other well. We have a similar background. We're of a similar age. We grew up under similar circumstances, and we all have a passion, an understanding of how, you know, when the rule of law is taken away, how quickly things can go wrong, and we don't respond well to ideas of authoritarianism, having lived under an authoritarian regime. And I think that, you know, you've got to constantly watch it. You know, the country changed. Under Mandela, we had a great period of euphoria and hope. And then, you know, we had the period of Jacob Zuma, who's another authoritarian. I mean, give South Africans a break. You know, it's just give us a break. I mean, it's just... But it just shows how important it is. At least South Africa now does have a great founding constitution. It's just a matter of our country beginning to live up to those. Because under apartheid, we didn't even have that. We didn't have a proper founding system of laws that we could turn to. And it's just terribly important now that that foundation is maintained and not threatened by any future government. So I guess that's why I'm passionate about the United States constitutional system. South Africa now has it. It has to live up to it. But democracy is always messy and unwieldy, but it's the best thing we've got. And you've just got to keep fighting for it. You know, it's never just suddenly going to be perfect.
I know, obviously, you do so well with fiction film, but are you any hopes of jumping back into the TV realm like Breaking Kings?
There's always a good half a dozen or more projects floating around that you're desperately trying to finance or get done or fix or write properly. So I do have a couple of television projects. I'm not going to say anything because they may not happen. And I'm always afraid that I'll need to say, that project you told me about, and then I have to say, well, it didn't happen. And you feel so. I'm for me, it's all about the story. You know, is there a great story? And we are in an age where, you know, there are. Some of the stories being told on television are really strong, and people's TVs are big, and they're not going to cinema as much. This is the new reality. And maybe that's fine, because, you know, your sound and your picture at home are now really good compared to 25 years ago. So I think it's great that really good work is being made for television. I love, for example, this HBO five-part Chernobyl series. I mean, what a perfect medium to do it. It was just brilliant for television to tell that story on television. So I have no doubt that moving between television and film is going to become something that more and more people do, and I don't think that's a bad thing. I mean, in some ways, you're almost able to reach a wider audience because when you release a film in theaters, you know, it's tough. People have got to get the babysitter and do a whole thing. It's very expensive, but once it's in everyone's home. On a streaming system, you can potentially reach an even wider audience. So I have, depending on the story, you know, some are really well suited to television. I think Chernobyl is an example.
Well, that kind of goes with kind of my last question. I was going to ask, what type of TV shows, movies, books are you reading now that you just kind of have fallen in love with or adore?
I tend to gravitate towards stories that have some grounding. Maybe it's my legal background. Maybe it's just the films that I've really enjoyed making the most. But I tend to like stories that are based in a reality and tend not to have easy answers, that don't just, you know, have good guy versus bad guy, and by the end, good guy beats bad guy, and we all go home. I think the real world is more complicated than that. It's more shades of gray. And I would hate to feel that the films like Eye in the Sky or Universal Secrets are my audience want to think. I'd like to think that they show you a story. Hopefully it's entertaining while you're watching it, otherwise who wants to watch anything, but hopefully by the end you've got something to talk about. That's always been my thing. I'd rather watch a film that generates a conversation. It must entertain me, and hopefully it leaves me.
Oh no.